This also provided an opportunity for the rest of the world that has really probably long wanted to better engage with Taiwan to have the chance to do so.
One expert says it is a pandemic that has provided that chance. This is Friday, May 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, the U.S. Secretary of State speaks out on a controversial firing. Australians are loading up on alcohol. You most likely can guess why. We are stocking up on cake ingredients here in the United States. New innovations are emerging to help poor countries deal with the coronavirus. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. government has notified Congress of a possible sale of advanced torpedoes to Taiwan worth around $180 million, further souring already tense ties between Washington and Beijing, which claims Taiwan as Chinese territory. The U.S. announcement came on the same day Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen was sworn in for her second term in office, saying she's strongly rejecting China's sovereignty claims. To examine the increasingly complex relationship between Taiwan, China, and the United States, VOA's Steve Miller spoke with Curtis S. Chin, former U.S. ambassador to the Asian Development Bank and Asia Fellow with the Milken Institute, a nonpartisan think tank.
When we think about the timing of what is going on with Taiwan and the rest of the world, clearly COVID-19 has provided an opportunity for not just Taiwan to increase its engagement with the world, but it's also provided an opportunity for the rest of the world that has really probably long wanted to better engage with Taiwan, to have the chance to do so. So, you know, I was struck by Beijing's response to the approvals. It was really run-of-the-mill. It wasn't more over-the-top than usual. And then we need to keep in mind that when, way back when under President Jimmy Carter, the U.S. switched recognition of the government of China, really from Taipei to Beijing, it was done with the understanding, with the approval from the U.S. Congress, that the U.S. would provide for Taiwan's defense in the Taiwan Defense Act. And so really this is just continuing that. That's par for the course. The other thing that we need to keep in mind is that Tsai Ing-wen, the president of Taiwan, just was re-inaugurated for her second term. And her speech, if people haven't heard, they really should read. I mean, she made very clear that Taiwan rejects this one country, two systems system that Beijing has put in place with Hong Kong. And given all that is happening in Hong Kong, we can very much understand why that is Taiwan's position.
Where do you see Taiwan's role internationally now?
Well, in some ways, Taiwan's role is strengthened by what has happened with this coronavirus. Beijing can be very vindictive. And so countries, companies, and others are really trying to think through how can they better engage with Taiwan to their own benefit, but also recognizing an increasingly aggressive and assertive Beijing may push back. So how does one work that balance? You know, it's really unfortunate for the world that Taiwan, in a way, has been so cut off because of Beijing's geopolitics, when indeed Taiwan can help. Taiwan is helping when we look at what they're doing in terms of trying to share their knowledge and trying to really contribute personal protective equipment and other materials to countries in need. You know, going back to Tsai Ing-wen's inauguration speech just yesterday, she spoke about four principles: peace, parity, democracy, and dialogue as principles that should guide that relationship between Beijing and Taipei. And very clearly, if both sides would take those principles into account, it'd be for the better of the region and of the world.
Curtis S. Chin, the former U.S. ambassador to the Asian Development Bank and an Asia Fellow with the Milken Institute. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at VOAnews.com. Hong Kong bans its annual Tiananmen March, citing COVID concerns. A study shows Philippines has a global hotspot for online child abuse. Japan is lifting its state of emergency for three more prefectures. The U.S. pledges support to Taiwan amid deepening China tensions. China and Vietnam top a virus response survey, but for different reasons. Asian markets closed mostly lower Thursday as investors reacted to bad economic news from Japan and China. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo admits he asked President Donald Trump to fire the internal State Department watchdog, but denies it was in retaliation for the watchdog investigating him. Democrats in Congress and the American Academy of Diplomacy see the firing as a troubling pattern in the Trump administration. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo faced reporters' questions Wednesday over the firing of his agency's internal watchdog, Inspector General Steve Linnick.
In this case, I recommended to the president that Steve Linnick be terminated. I frankly should have done it some time ago.
Media reports surfaced that Inspector General Linnick was investigating Pompeo for the use of State Department aides to perform personal errands for the secretary and his wife, who often accompanies Pompeo on trips abroad. Pompeo called the reports crazy and strongly denied the firing was retaliation.
Let's be clear. There are claims that this was for retaliation, for some investigation that the inspector general's office here was engaged in. It's patently false.
Pompeo declined to answer why Linnick deserved firing. Democratic lawmakers say Linnick was also investigating how Pompeo pushed through a $7 billion Saudi arms sale last year using an emergency declaration to bypass Congress. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Congress passed a law about sales to Saudi Arabia, arms sales to Saudi Arabia, and in that department, they declared a fake emergency in order to initiate the sales, and then, and that may have been part of the investigation.
Pelosi said President Donald Trump was undermining American democracy by recently firing four inspectors general, pointing out the posts were created after the 1970s Watergate scandal to expose waste, fraud, and abuse. The president of the American Academy of Diplomacy told VOA he agrees.
This removal of one of four inspector generals is part of a bigger issue, which is the administration challenging the balance of powers in the Constitution and the ability of the Congress to carry out its own job. But it is Congress which must and has the power to fix that balance if it wants to.
Pompeo left the briefing as a reporter tried to ask about an IG probe into last year's arms deal with Saudi Arabia. But Pompeo will likely face more questions in the future, perhaps on Capitol Hill. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, China's parliament will propose legislation to protect security in Hong Kong in response to pro-democracy protests in the territory last year that often turned violent. But U.S. President Donald Trump said Thursday that his administration would respond strongly if China enacts the newly proposed national security legislation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Researchers say stress and alcohol consumption during the COVID-19 pandemic are likely to increase rates of family violence in Australia. Research has found that a fifth of Australians have bought more alcohol than usual during the lockdowns. Of those, 70% are drinking more. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Health campaigns are urging Australians not to turn to alcohol because of concerns about the coronavirus.
None of us could ever imagine finding ourselves in this situation. So it's okay to feel stressed. It's okay to feel anxious and a little bit uncertain. But we just need to be careful that we're not using alcohol.
Recent research, though, shows that 20% of Australian households have bought more alcohol than usual during the crisis. Katerina Giorgi is the chief executive of Australia's Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education.
We found that one in five households are purchasing more alcohol. And when we looked at these households, we found that 70% are drinking more and that a third are worried about their drinking or the drinking of someone in their household. We also found that these people are drinking earlier in the day and they're more likely to drink daily. And that contributes to larger problems down the track, including alcohol dependence and alcohol-fueled chronic diseases like cancer.
There are likely to be other more sinister consequences too. Australian courts have heard more cases of domestic violence and paramedics are responding to more emergency calls. The police have conducted dozens of random checks on known offenders and victims. In the Northern Territory, doctors have reported a 15% increase in the number of people requiring surgery due to family violence. Collated national figures are not yet available, but Nicole Lee, a professor at Curtin University's National Drug Research Institute, believes rates of domestic abuse will increase.
Alcohol consumption's got quite a complex relationship with family violence, but while we don't have any data about the rates of family violence during lockdown, I expect that we would see an increase in family violence. That's especially likely because increased stress in the household and increases in unemployment.
More funding is being given to crisis support services for victims of violence in the home. Australia's alcohol industry denies the survey findings. It says overall, Australian beer, wine and spirits consumption is lower than it was a year ago because of pandemic-related closures of pubs, bars and restaurants. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news alert from VOA Asia. More than half the nations of Southeast Asia started this week by taking a donation of protective personal equipment, such as medical suits and masks, from their neighbor, Vietnam, to help them in the fight against COVID-19. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. When even rich countries have a hard time containing COVID-19, what happens to developing countries where electricity is not a given and clean water is scarce? These countries need ventilators, medical oxygen, masks, and other supplies to help them get through the pandemic. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on a program that is funding innovations where they are so desperately needed.
In Sao Paulo, the death toll from COVID-19 is so high, officials say it's a struggle to get the dead buried. Overwhelmed healthcare workers and hospitals in much of Latin America struggle to care for the sick with far fewer resources than in Europe or the United States. In South Africa, people line up to be tested. Every country in Africa has recorded cases of coronavirus.
I'm John Kelly, the founder and CEO of Atomo Diagnostics.
Atomo Diagnostics makes HIV test kits. Now it's gearing up to produce blood-based tests for COVID-19. Ventilators are badly needed in developing countries. Portable, battery-run ventilators like this one are critical. Gradient Health Systems is a non-profit medical technology company. It makes these ventilators for African countries and provides training and technical support.
So if it breaks or there's, you know, an issue with it, there's someone immediately able to fix it. And
even after the pandemic is over, Gradient's ventilators will be in place.
So what we see it as a very layered approach and a long-term approach to not only just a response to COVID-19, but how do you build preparedness for the next inevitable thing that may come our way?
In India, girls cannot attend school regularly, and women have difficulty keeping their jobs unless they have menstrual pads. Enter Seral Design Solutions. Now the company is retooling machinery to make face masks as well, with a grant from Grand Challenges Canada, an operation that supports innovators in low and middle income countries.
So what we're doing now is just accelerating by putting more attention, more funding, and more support into the innovations we had previously funded.
The funding is provided in part by a number of investors, including the Canadian government.
We had already invested in several different innovations to increase the access of medical oxygen in areas of the world where that is not as common as we see in developed countries. And that's exactly the kind of first line treatment that is needed for severe COVID.
The goal is to provide aid during the coronavirus pandemic, and when it's over, to leave these countries better off than before, so they can provide reliable medical care going forward. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Now on VOA Asia, the coronavirus pandemic has gutted New York City's restaurants. Celebrity chef and restaurateur Tom Colicchio discusses what's at stake and what could be done to save the industry. Tina Trin reports.
In New York City, restaurants stay closed except for takeout and delivery service. It's a fraction of the business they normally do, but even when operations fully resume, recovery will be difficult.
When we open up, we are going to have to open up into social distancing in our business, meaning we have to remove half our seats.
Celebrity chef Tom Colicchio co-founded the Independent Restaurant Coalition to lobby Congress for long-term funding.
We're asking the government for a restaurant stabilization package that will not only get us open, but keep us going for the next, 8 to 12 months, because that's what we're going to need.
Colicchio says the bigger question is not when restaurants reopen.
It's a question of when the public feels comfortable walking to an establishment, when the bartenders and the waitstaff are wearing masks, and when the whole place smells like, Lysol.
One New York City Council proposal calls for expanding street closures to allow for more alfresco dining. It's already happening, albeit unofficially. The warm weather recently proved too hard to resist as many broke social distancing orders on the Upper East Side and congregated outdoors, some giving new meaning to the phrase sidewalk seating. But in a city of 27,000 restaurants, outdoor space isn't always a given. In the meantime, hunger and unemployment persist. Colicchio thinks he has a solution.
If you want to keep that supply chain intact and you want to keep workers working and you want to get rid of those lines that we're seeing for people lining up for food banks, fund restaurants to become community feeding centers.
Colicchio says distributing work across the city's restaurants keeps more of them in business while helping the efforts of local food pantries. But before anything can happen, ensuring the health and safety of workers and customers is critical.
My biggest fear is, we'll open up some restaurants, we'll get it going, and 2 months later, we run out of money, everyone's back on unemployment, and the restaurants are permanently closed.
A recovery with more questions than answers. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Many in the United States have been treating the quarantine as a time to perfect their cooking, particularly comfort foods, food that isn't necessarily healthy. Karina Bafradzian looked into why Americans opt for baking during this difficult time and whether the U.S. might face a flour shortage.
With the start of the quarantine and lockdown measures in the U.S., more Americans opted for cooking food at home. The number of online searches for homemade pasta, cookies, cakes, and muffins went through the roof as people chose comfort foods to feel better during these trying times. Josie Baker, owner of a bakery in the state of California, says since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, he has received thousands of questions through social media and his followers.
I was noticing a real uptick in the emails and social media questions about how to bake. And, you know, we were seeing a lot more people asking for our sourdough starter and buying our flour. And so I started making some instructional videos.
People are Googling various recipes while online stores have noticed a surge in demand for bread and waffle makers. In the meantime, it is progressively harder for people to find flour and yeast in grocery stores.
There's plenty of grain. Mills are now running 24/7 to try and meet the demand. And where the bottlenecks are really between the mills themselves and the shelves of the grocery store, because of the pandemic, there are fewer people staffing grocery stores and throughout the supply chain.
Experts say this love for baking during the quarantine is natural. People tend to choose comforts in baked goods when they're stressed out and anxious, says Michelle Reber, a professor of psychiatry at the University of Michigan.
It gives you some control over, you know, your situation. It gives you something to do. You can be creative. You could do something with your family. You know, it's a family activity. You can plan for it. And then you have a finished product, which is, you know, very satisfying.
While traveling and meeting with friends is not possible, baking gives people a reason to refresh their social networks, and trying new recipes is a topic for discussion.
Food for a lot of people, and especially my friends, and especially for me, is a comfort, right? It is a kind of a taste of home.
So for now, vegetable smoothies and chia seeds have temporarily made way for chocolate chip cookies and banana breads. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Washington.
Since the outbreak of the deadly coronavirus, many businesses in the United States have been forced to close, while others are struggling to find creative ways to maintain customers and keep their staff employed. VOA's Julie Tabo reports on a company that has repurposed its facilities to make products for frontline workers in their fight against the deadly pandemic.
Hundreds of workers at General Motors and other auto companies have gone back to work to make face shields, surgical masks, and ventilators for frontline workers battling the coronavirus.
We work with the state of Michigan to find out where the most critical need is in the healthcare world. And we have volunteers that literally put these masks, boxes of these masks, in their car and drive them to the hospital all around the state.
Smaller businesses also have been joining in the nationwide effort to help beleaguered, under-equipped nurses, doctors, and paramedics who are treating patients with the highly contagious virus.
Everything you're proud of to a Framebridge store near you.
Framebridge, which produces custom picture framing, has shifted most of its central operations in Kentucky to the temporary manufacturing of personal protection equipment, PPE, for healthcare workers.
So, like every other business, in the middle of March, we were trying to figure out what to do and what we should do. And so we had a team meeting every single morning to figure out how to navigate the situation. And one of us said, you know, we have machines that cut acrylic. I wonder if we could make anything.
Since they use acrylic to make their picture frames, it seemed logical to repurpose the material to make face shields.
Our whole leadership team galvanized around the idea. And what was terrific was none of us stopped to say, does this make the most sense for us to do right now? How will we get it done? Will we be able to? We just instantly sort of realized that could be our purpose.
In addition to face shields, the company is also making cloth droplet masks. Tynan says they were surprised by the range of people who could not find the PPE they needed. To date, the company has produced about 35,000 face shields for frontline workers and organizations in 21 states across the U.S. Once the pandemic is over, Tynan plans to go back to its picture framing services full-time and open stores in New York and Atlanta. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Pupoboon, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.